Rabbi Daniel Bider, who's on the line. We can ask him that very, very question. A very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. I'm great. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion around statues and removing of statues of people that might have been good, might have been had parts of them that are bad, some of them completely bad. But from a Judaic perspective, we haven't really hidden some of the more difficult periods in our own history and the people that were problematic. We know that Abraham comes from a line of idol worshippers, and we learn that quite openly, and in fact we even talk about it on Passover at the Seder. So we haven't removed them from our history, but at the same time we don't build statues to them. What is the approach as far as Judaism is concerned around them?
Well, Judaism is all about having a very open and clear understanding of what you've done and what other people have done, what's right, what's wrong. And if we were to depict all our national heroes as saints, then it would be very depressing for the rest of us, because we would say we can never be like them. I've got ABC, XYZ wrong with me. I haven't got any hope. That's not the way things are. People get to where they are as a result of decisions they've made and struggles they've overcome. So, yeah, Abraham had them, Isaac had them, we all have them. There's hope for everyone. And to pretend that people were born as very righteous people is clearly a mistake. There's actually a very tragic episode where the Jewish people got it badly wrong, which I'm going to talk about today. Is that okay if I move over to...
Absolutely.
Okay. Very good. So what I wanted to talk about today was, I'm going to call it playing catch-up, trying to fix something which has gone wrong. And it's always easier to prevent the problem happening at the outset. And we have a couple of proverbs in English which try to portray that. And there's a subtle difference between two of them, and I want to talk about that today. So one of the ideas out there, this is a bit of a sort of primary school debating society kind of topic. So on the one hand, we're told a stitch in time saves nine. We're also told that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. They both seem to be saying the same thing. They both seem to be saying that if you take the appropriate measures in time, everything's going to work out okay in the end. If you don't take them, then it's going to be a lot harder to fix things when they've gone wrong. Now, there's a subtle difference between these two ideas. A stitch in time saves nine means that you should have done one stitch, but because you didn't, you're going to do nine stitches to fix everything, meaning that the currency you're paying in is the same. You're just going to need to pay more of it. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure means that there's something called prevention and there's something else called cure. And prevention and cure might not be the same thing. You are going to pay dearly if you don't get it right in time, and you're going to pay in a different currency. Yesterday's trick is not going to work for tomorrow when you've got it all wrong. And that's really what I want to talk about today. So, if you will, there are certain times when, if you get it right in time, you are going to save yourself some hassle. If you get it wrong, you're going to have hassle, but it's going to be the same kind of hassle. It's going to be the same kind of cost. For example, if you are trying to buy a house on a rising market and you hum and haw and you hesitate when you should have bought a house, you're going to have to pay more money to build the house that you waited too long to buy. Same thing with plane tickets. If you're on your screen looking at the plane ticket that you wanted back in the olden days when you can actually fly from one place to the other, you sometimes think, oh, that's a bit more than I expected. Let me think about that. Let me see what happens tomorrow. You go on tomorrow, it's even more expensive. A stitch in time would have saved nine. Had you bought the ticket when it was marginally more expensive than you thought it would be, even though it's probably what you always thought it would be anyway, you would have saved the increasing amount of money that this ticket costs each day that goes by. Same with house maintenance. Pay the money, fix the boiler, fix whatever it is so that you don't have water ingress and you don't lose the whole wall as a result of your tardy attitude towards fixing things up. Now, what we're going to talk about today is where you can't really do that. You can't just pay more money, where you kind of move into a different zone and it's all going to start looking very different. So I'd like to start with an episode which happened in the forthcoming parasha, the Sedra, which we would be reading this week if we were back in shul. I think some people in Australia are back in shul, but apart from them, we're not. So I know this is not your favorite story because I read the Jewish Report this week, and I hope you don't mind me mentioning it. There was an episode shortly after the Jews left the land of Egypt. It was going to take a very short period of time for them to get to the land of Israel. They took the view that it was worth sending some spies in to see what would happen. They weren't really supposed to. Moses told them not to. If you have to, we will. God said, begrudgingly, if you have to, we will. They sent the spies. The spies came back. Damning report about the land of Israel. Mass hysteria, don't want to do it. And they were told, well, instead of this taking you a few weeks, it's going to take 40 years for you to get to where you need to get to. Now, there's a subplot over here. There's a little sequel which is hidden away, which not many people know about. There was actually a group of Jewish people who said, actually, that's terrible. We've blown the opportunity. How tragic that we missed the opportunity to go into the land of Israel. We're going to go. We're going to pick up our sticks and our arms and whatever, you know, whatever we have, and we're going to go. We haven't missed it. We're going. Now, God said it's not going to work. Moses said it's not going to work. And indeed, they, on the back of that, not exactly a God's blessing, they went ahead, did it, tried to get into the land of Israel, failed miserably. They were annihilated at the get-go, first off. Now, that's very interesting, because what we see over there is that sometimes you can have proactivity, but it's yesterday's trick. It's yesterday's thing that you should have done, and it's not going to work today. So they were trying to do what they should have done the day before, which was to go to Israel, but they didn't. They said, you know, they'd missed it, and they were trying to go today when that wasn't going to be the solution for today. And I think that's really echoed very strongly in the corona landscape. Corona, I know it's a horrible disease, but actually some people have emerged from this, not just okay, but actually emerged from it triumphant. I was reading about New Zealand. Jacinda Ardern, I hope I've pronounced her name correctly. Mm-hmm. So New Zealand has basically emerged from coronavirus. And she celebrated. She said when she was told that New Zealand was corona-free, she danced a little dance. Now, why did she dance a little dance? She danced a little dance because 22 people died, but that's a tragedy. 22 people died in New Zealand. I looked at why she danced. I'm reading here from some newspaper somewhere. So it says, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern told reporters she did a little dance when she was told the country no longer had any active virus cases because... The determination and focus we have had in our health response will now be vested in our economic rebuild. So New Zealand's going to emerge from this stronger. Not only have they, yes, they've had the tragedy of 22 people dying, but they were on the front foot moving forward. They were on the offensive when this happened, and the country has now got a victory, got laurels to rest on, and they can move forward into the future knowing that they did a good job. There was an esprit de corps. They came together. This was an opportunity for the nation to come together, be strong, etc. They did everything at the right time. They had a very draconian lockdown early on, etc. They confronted the challenge and they've actually emerged stronger. This is an opportunity. This is not unlike coming to the land of Israel. They've been given this thing which involved very few casualties. Obviously, each one is a tragedy, but they've emerged stronger.
Right.
Massive result. Now, other countries, I think, have got it badly wrong. Yes, they said there was going to be a lockdown. Before the lockdown set in, insanity set in. So if I look at a different newspaper report, I'm going to move over now to Germany. Police had to break up several so-called corona parties on Monday evening, the night before the lockdown happened, where hundreds of students had bought cases of corona beer and gathered in parks. So here are people knowing there's a lockdown, knowing there's a reason for a lockdown, but faced with the unhappiness of a lockdown and the misery of a lockdown, they said, well, let's just have one last party, which is complete madness, complete hysteria, not unlike the Jewish people being told, we've got something very exciting happening, we've got a challenge we can face nationally, walk into the land of Israel, and they blew it, these people in Berlin and in America and in London and in many places where it was, okay, lockdown's happening tomorrow, let's forget about why lockdown's happening, let's just party while it's still legal, even if it's not very sensible. Same kind of thing, the virus spreads, and now these countries are on the defensive. What they should have done is lockdown, testing, social distancing. Now, social distancing and lockdown is not going to help you when you are in an incredibly weak position. Also, your headspace is going to be a real struggle. You know, it's easy to get motivated when the virus is about to come. Let's confront it. When you're in London, England, or, you know, New York, somewhere in the United States, and you're talking about, are we going to try and stem, are we going to try and hold back the casualty rate from 40,000 to 41,000? That's far less exciting than no one suffered yet, no one's died yet. Let's do what we can to erect this dam and stop this horrible thing coming in here. So the headspace is different. You know, when you're on the offensive, it's very different to being on the defensive. Plus, what you have to do, you know, whereas yesterday testing and social distancing would have been okay, and now you're talking about buying thousands of ventilators, crippling the nation's economy, it's a completely different ballgame. So the lesson that emerges really from the experience in the wilderness of the Jews who wanted to use yesterday's trick, we're going to go into Israel even though it's the wrong time now and we've blown it. The message emerging from a world where corona has been let out of control by many countries who didn't do enough quickly enough, and yesterday's trick, the testing and distancing, is not going to work anymore. The message that clearly emerges is, it's not just about stitch in time, save nine. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, because the cure is going to be much dearer and it's going to be paid in a very different currency to what would have been okay 3 months ago. So the lesson is, use your head, don't get caught up in the euphoria and frustration of the masses. Always be proactive, not reactive. That's what's going to get you to your chosen land or to a corona-free world. And if you've blown it at some point, don't assume that last year's trick, that yesterday's trick, is going to work, because, you know, God and Moses are telling you it's not going to work, it probably won't work. Testing somebody who's just returned from a trip to China who's suffering from a respiratory disease or social distancing is not really going to help them very much. It's too late for all that. And if we bring this into the family sphere, if your 35-year-old son is terribly upset that you didn't spend enough time with him in your childhood, it's not going to be okay buying him a packet of crisps and going to the park with him to play football on Sunday, even if you do that twice or three times. The nine stitches, the nine times, is not going to help. It's too little, too late. So get that answer prevention in there in time.
Lovely, lovely thought, Rabbi Daniel.